Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic University podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Canton III, and we are continuing our coverage of the Disney Plus animated series, X-Men 97. I am here with the super producer, Jake Christie. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to be back talking about this show.
Yes, and episode 3, Fire Made Flesh. And you know what fire did not make flesh? The fire that is the MC University Patreon. Patreon.com/MCUniversityPod. You can get our bonus content. We just released Mission Impossible 3 for those who are interested. $3 to get every single previous episode that is cataloged. We got Bracket First Take going on with Caleb and Mike and Jake as they go through yes. The MC University tournament, which is now headed down and winding down to its later stages. We will see who will make the final four.
You know, I actually did some math and a couple episodes ago, and I believe it's getting to the point where if you pay the $3, technically speaking, for the month, you are get every episode is only like 5 cents. So because we've done so many. So, you know, it's a good deal.
It's great math. And then on top of that, you have the $3 also gets you into our Discord where we have mm-hmm. a lot of fun conversations. And
oh, great
and
stuff.
And on top of that, the subscriber mailbag is another thing that we do as well. So check that out if you can. But let's jump right in to this episode. And I think the first initial thought on this episode is, God damn it, these folks did it again. It was a lot of fun. They continue to kind of push the envelope of what an animated series could be on Disney. With a lot of some semi-risque stuff. The dialogue is interesting and things along those lines. And, of course, you have the Jean Grey / Madeline Pryor situation. As we saw that come to fruition this week, Jean Grey is a clone. Cyclops had a baby with a clone Jean Grey. Oh, my gosh, Jake, yeah. The drama.
They didn't spend enough time on that. That, like, I think that, like, the whole... I was laying in a marital bed with a clone this entire time is the thing that should have caused Cyclops a little bit more of a crisis. And of course that does raise the question of like, what is the nature of being? Is a person not just an accumulation of their memories formed into a personality? Like, I think that that's what the episode posits. And that's what I personally believe, not to get metaphysical 2 minutes in, but, there is a question of like, what does it mean? You know, like, if this show was, you know, really wanted to get messy, what if the real Jean Grey is jealous? No, I'm kidding. But no, it was really an interesting reveal. I think the thing about this, which is really nice, is how this is moving, you know? Like, I feel like in the Marvel live-action shows, they would have introduced another Jean Grey coming to the door, and then they wouldn't have explained what happened until 5 episodes later. And this, it's like, no, we get it. It keeps going. We meet Mr. Sinister, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure you have much more to say because, you know, I didn't grow up with the show. So what did you make of it?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm pretty surprised at how, and they're finding a way to move through these stories without it seeming like it's necessarily rushed. It feels like there are things certainly that are left on the table that make you wonder about what might come and what's next. I mean, to your point, the Jean Grey Cyclops relationship and what that looks like over the next few weeks. I want to see how they decide to play it and how they decide to tell that story. That should be a lot of fun. But they give you like little nuggets here and there, but it never feels unimportant, at least to this point so far. And I think that's great that they've established that. And it makes you wonder exactly how, goodness gracious, you get the writer of this show, the creator of this show, Bo DiMaio, like what exactly did he do to get fired? Because to this point, he's done a tremendous job at crafting this.
It's got to violate the Geneva Convention or something. Like, I don't want to speculate. But it has to be, it's definitely something outside the writing. Because clearly, I mean, the writing's really good. And I think that Marvel's satisfied with it. I'm sure they're satisfied with the numbers. Although, obviously, it's not public information now. Just based anecdotally, like, there's more conversation about this show online than anyone since, I think, maybe the first season of Loki. Like, it's, yeah. Everyone's watching the show, you know? Like, people who are not huge Marvel heads. Like, there was this tweet that I retweeted, which I really love, from Spencer Hall of the Shutdown Fullcast. Respect to X-Men 97 for making sure Beast showed up immediately using the Holtz thesaurus and conducting science hanging down by his feet. Like, you get so many people like that, you know, who are obviously fans of the old show, who are tweeting about it, watching it. And so it had to be something outside of the purview of his responsibilities as a writer.
Yeah, and it's not to speculate any further, but it as a friend of the show Summer, she said, what, like, she posted a video not too long ago, a Boondocks video of like, what did he do to make them folks that mad? And it's just fascinating to wonder about that. But you know, in terms of the show itself, I think they find a way to fit in a lot of different storylines with the X-Men. I think the Gambit, we got a little bit of a continuation of Gambit's feelings about the whole Rogue Magneto thing. They haven't been outed publicly as of yet. Nobody's had a conversation with them as of yet, but it is interesting that at the outset of this episode, they're at the Danger Room, and Morph, who seems to be the shit stirrer of this group, notices that Rogue and Magneto have a lot of time scheduled in the Danger Room, and he says something along the lines of, man, she's training to get a lot of stamina with the new boss. And yeah. I was like,
That's wild, especially someone pointed out on Twitter, I think you retweeted them, that it's clearly a mistake, but the calendar at one point it shows that they reserved 10 p.m. to 12 p.m., which obviously should be a.m., but it's like, well, they're in there for 14 hours? That's insane.
That's a lot, boy. And so you get that, and it makes you wonder where that storyline goes. So I'm excited to see how that translates. But I think another thing as we talk about Morph for a second, because we get this like little bits and pieces of his story continuing as.
But I just want to say I believe they're saying that Morph is non-binary in this iteration.
Yes, then
I would say they, but not. I don't want to be that guy. But
oh, okay, I got you. But
I feel like it's important that they're doing this, and if Morph is non-binary, then the correct thing to say would be they.
Fair point. I'll try and remember this.
I know that you're not doing it on purpose. I just figure, like, you know what? If they're gonna go through the trouble of doing it, you know.
Exactly. With the situation as far as Morph is concerned, we see that they have this issue with Mr. Sinister that continued to occur from the X-Men original animated series. And friend of the show Cam Hawkins, who was on with us last week. He noted that they show the eyes as they hear about Mr. Sinister.
I can just look it up. I apologize again. Apparently, they say that they're not referring to Morph as they because that was not a thing that was done in 97. So I don't know. You can say he.
Okay, we're gonna manage this as best as we can here.
Yeah, this is. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one who is wondering about this.
Yes. So in terms of the So with Morph going through the situation that occurred with Mr. Sinister, there was a lot of psychological trauma from the mind control that was done. And there was a point where the eyes had like a little bit of a purple shading that they revisit here. So that was a cool little touch that psychological trauma still exists. I think another thing with Morph is the relationship with Wolverine seems a little bit more beyond friendship than you would expect. As the hallucinations from the clone gene, you know, persist, Morph sees Wolverine in the shower, and I'm like, oh my goodness. You almost wonder if they had gotten it on previously.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely I like that they're seeding all this stuff, that they don't need to be super, you know, crazy. I think the thing that's really interesting about Morph is the line that he says of when Morph sees Wolverine in the shower of like, oh, you strike out with the redheads or whatever. There's like kind of like a pain to that of like the pain of like, I have to joke about Logan's escapades because I know that he'll never see me that way. And so like, I have to kind of be like one of the guys of like, oh, ha ha, you struck out. And I think that's kind of the way they go with it. And yeah, I mean, I don't know I don't know a ton about Morph, since Morph is not a character that they really chat in the films. But I think that there is a very interesting, there's interesting things to mine there, and I know that they did in the original series, of like, what is someone's identity if their identity is that they could be anyone else? And I think that, you know, clearly they use humor a lot, but in a way that even three episodes in, you can tell is to hide a lot of shit. Like, you know, there's a lot of pain there.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing how that plot develops. And so we get Cyclops initially, because this episode starts with Beast, you know, doing the tests, and it's confirmed that the Jean Grey that Cyclops is with is a clone. And how Scott Summers acts in this episode is definitely something of, oh, it's interesting to watch, because you kind of get it that you don't know what to do in a situation like that. But then also there's the, our pal in the Discord, Paul Bowl, notes that he goes like, that's something that Gene would and possibly should hold over his head for like forever. Like, wait a minute, how do you not know that that's me or that's not me in the situation?
Yeah, you know, I can definitely, or he's really going to be in the doghouse in like 3 weeks, you know, they're in the bedroom. It's like, but the other Gene would do that. But no, I think that, yeah, and like I said, I think that there is a very interesting idea of like, if your wife got replaced with a clone with all of her memories and you didn't know about it, how could you possibly tell? Like, because what would happen? Because it's one of those things, like, she would know all the references that you guys have together. She would have all the same family. Like, there actually would be no way to tell. And so, like, that's why it is an interesting idea of what makes a person. And, of course, when Jean is mad at Scott and is yelling at him about this, she's not going to be thinking about these metaphysical things. But, like, I can't blame him the thing I can blame him for is not feeling that guilty about it. Even if it isn't his fault, he kind of plays it like he's way too quick to be like, how could I have known? Which, like, you have to act a little bit guiltier, you know, because that is your actual wife laying there, you know, in distress. And
boy, it's a tough situation, because as you see, and it kind of turns quick, where fake Jean, aka Madeline, aka the Goblin Queen, really, that turn happens quick, where she becomes like very, very angry, very vengeful to a degree, and that bitterness kind of sneaks in. Oh man!
I believe that there's the phrase "a hit dog will holler" is applicable here.
Yep. Oh my god! And so, like, seeing how that ends up playing out, and then Gene coming into the situation throughout as the episode advances, and they learn that it's Mr. Sinister, and Mr. Sinister kidnaps the baby, baby Nathan, and that's a whole thing. So then, obviously, Jean is recovering, but then she gets involved in a psychological battle as well. So from a drama standpoint, it's like they have put this shit on steroids to the max to begin.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's because obviously Jean is an incredibly compelling character because of the way she's able to do things with her mind. And it's a little bit, you know, they eventually like literalize it with the memories. But I think that there is something to, like, because you mentioned how immediately defensive fake Jean gets.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, you know, it's like, okay, she is a hit dog, she's hollering. But on the other hand, it's like, up until that moment, she thought she was Jean Grey. You know?
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, obviously clones don't exist and you can't implant someone's memories. But, like, they're actually, like, right now, Anthony, you have no way of being sure that you're not a clone of yourself with memories implanted. There's no possibility for you to know. You literally cannot know. And so, I am sympathetic to her. And I think that, like, I understand, I get everyone's reactions. You would hope that the other people would be more understanding, because once again, she thought she was Jean Grey. But then, yeah, she immediately turns. But it's not really her fault to turn. She was kind of programmed to turn.
Right, right. And then this obviously leads to Mr. Sinister, who was really a headline villain in the initial iteration of the X-Men animated series as he is the one who brainwashed Morph, kidnapped Scott and Jean to try and do exactly what he did in this situation, which is continue to experiment and make clones. And the baby, it was his focus. I thought it was funny at one point. It was funny and kind of like weird, like the way that he put the baby. It looked like a crock pot that he put the baby in.
Mm-hmm.
I
was like, what the fuck? You were honestly, it was like, it looked like a back to tank, honestly, a little bit. But no, he's a crazy dedication to be like, you know, for my experiment, I need to make a clone. And is the clone itself going to be the point of the experiment? No. I'm going to send the clone in, wait for her to organically get pregnant by her boyfriend, and then that baby is going to be what I experiment on. But yeah, it's a crazy plan. You know, Mr. Sinister, obviously, the look is great. I mean, he looks...
Oh, yeah.
He looks sinister. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you.
Yes.
And I think that... is it ever, like, I'm sure in different comics it is, but like, what is the deal with the child of two mutants? Like, one, are they always a mutant? I think the answer is probably yes, right?
Yes.
And two, like, are they more mutant? Like, do they have like more special powers? Like, what is it? Or is that something that's not necessarily always firmly established?
Well, it's not necessarily firmly established. I think there are some instances where, because in this case, like with Cyclops and Jean, the Nathan character eventually grows up to be Cable, and he has the similar kind of he ends up being the time traveling soldier similar to Bishop. And it's not necessarily as clear like what the powers always are, because there is a little bit of his gun is an absorber. It's not like Bishop, who can actually absorb all types of energy. But this is why Mr. Sinister is kind of so focused on doing stuff like this, is that there is a goal clearly in mind to experiment at all costs and just try and tinker. He's been doing that since, I mean, what, like the 1600s when he was alive. So, yeah. And then he used, I believe in the comics, he used Apocalypse to allow him to get mutant powers. And so he can continue to live this entire time.
Yeah. I mean, his experiments have been fruitful. You know, no one else from that time is around. So he's doing well there. But I think that I really want to talk about the dream sequence type thing. It's not really a dream sequence because, you know, they actually get hurt. But I think we got to talk about Gambit, what he walks in on.
Oh, yeah. He walks in on Magneto and Rogue and, you know, scantily clad and... My goodness gracious! It seemed like they were doing
straight up. This is a word I think you'll appreciate because this is a really washed word. They were straight up canoodling. they were canoodling.
There was definitely something going on. That I think what Gambit saw, he wished he could unsee.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that triangle and how it develops and what that means, because there is this sense that Rogue like really cares about Gambit as she comes back and she goes to him immediately. And it's like, but wait a minute, what are you, you still hiding what you doing out here?
Yeah. I think that was the most interesting thing to me about this, about their plotline this episode, was how immediately she went over to him. So it's like, she clearly cares about him, but, and I'm going to try to say this in a way that's not being crass, because often my instinct is to make a crass joke, but like, Magneto can actually touch her, and so like, yeah, that's like a thing that is like, we joke about it, but it's, you know, I'm really trying hard not to be crass, but like, she's a woman with needs, and she probably appreciates that Magneto, even if she emotionally cares for Gambit, there are things that Gambit can't do that Magneto can. And so you know, it's a tough situation for her. Not that she should be, you know, canoodling, but you know.
Well, I mean, this is where
you can canoodling's fine, honestly.
It's fine. Like they're consenting adults. Like everything is on the up and up, except the fact that she ain't saying nothing to Gambit about it yet. Which, you know, when that comes out, I can't wait to see what that conversation looks like. What if anything Gambit's gonna do to Magneto? Because there ain't really much that he got for him in terms of the actual fighting portion of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I love
see jambalaya.
Spicy jambalaya. And I think the funny part is like he, like Rogue does go to Gambit, but who does she walk in with? She walks in with Magneto. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's almost like they're not hiding it. They're hiding it, but not hiding it at the same time. So I'm waiting for that powder keg to blow. I know you mentioned the dream sequence thing. And I think another thing that kind of occurred and it's been a through line from the original animated series is how Wolverine feels about Jean and their whole thing. And when the original Jean Grey like remembers Wolverine, they have this like very, very sweet and tender moment. And then Wolverine's like, oh my gosh, this feels like this is something really good happening. And then she's like, Scott, oh, I forgot about Scott. It's like, damn.
Just unfathomable levels of dirty macking going on. It's sick. But yeah, he is so plain. Like the thing, after watching just three episodes of this, although, you know, I understand people don't like Scott is completely in the right to hate Wolverine. Wolverine is flagrant.
Very incredibly flagrant.
And yeah, so she, you know, he really cares about her. And it's like, she's as down bad as I've probably ever seen a fictional character. Honestly, the only thing that's comparable to it is, I don't know how deep you remember the whole storyline of Harry Potter, but the whole idea that like Snape protected Harry Potter over like 20 years because he was in love with her mom, like his mom, like that's a level of simping we're talking about. Like if the years are double digits and you're still simping over someone that is with another guy, like it's a problem.
Logan, the classic loner, and you almost wonder. I want to see what happens with Morph. That's intriguing, because if you're looking for some companionship, it's right there. If you want it.
The thing that obviously this is TVPG, so they can't really go into, but like Morph can be Jean Grey. I mean, now of course I think that Logan at first blush would think that he wants that, but then he would realize, like, no, I actually love Jean Grey. I don't love someone who is a redhead, you know, who looks like Jean Grey. Right. Which, yeah. I mean, that's like, it goes back to the same thing of what makes a person a person. Because, you know, Morph can pretend to be anyone, but Morph isn't anyone.
Yeah, I think you have this story, and as it kind of unfolds, now you have the Jean and Scott are now left together with trying to figure out what their relationship is coming off of this situation. You have the Gambit, Rogue, Magneto portion of it all, and the Wolverine Morph thing that we just mentioned, and including that as we get to the episode's conclusion, we have Bishop taking the child who Mr. Sinister inhibits him with a virus that apparently is supposed to, with him fighting it, make him invulnerable, but they take him out of the back to tank, as you say. And then he's sick and he's not able to go through to complete the process. So he has to go into the future. And there comes the other like kind of big conversation between Madeline and Cyclops and taking the kid into the future and what that conversation is like. And it's just such a complicated thing to weave through, as you have to make a choice so difficult, even though you know it's the right one for your child.
It's one of those, like, it is a hard thing to do. And you're a parent, obviously, so you'll have more to say this. It feels like it's a hard thing to do, but the decision itself, I feel like, is incredibly easy. It's just really, really hard to do. Like, obviously, you do what you have to do to save your child, but it's impossible to do, you know?
Yeah, like, Scott goes with the, like, I can't watch this. I can't go with it. And, you know, something along those lines. So I think that part is always going to be... That part is just always difficult. Like I felt that as far as Scott was concerned, Scott walked off. He was a little bit more indignant than maybe I probably would have been in a situation like that. But it's tough. It's a tough situation to go through. So, and it'll be fascinating to see where this goes and how this plays out as we advance through the rest of these seven episodes that remain. And I think the beautiful thing so far about this show, like overall, is it really feels like a continuation without a continuation. There are obviously a lot of threads from the previous series that they harken back through, but it still feels fresh. There's like a fresh twist to it. And I really like the way that the plot's advancing. And as we get to the close of the episode, we see Storm and she meets one Mr. Forge. And it seems like they are going to adapt the life-death storyline from the comic books, where Forge enables her to get her powers back in, but also in the process, she learns that she's more than her powers. And I think that's a wonderful thing. That's a nice little thing they put on the back burner to tease us for next week and going forward.
Yeah. Now, I do have a question. You mentioned Jean Grey, she obviously becomes Madeline Pryor. Where did she get that name from? Like, she just says, please call me Madeline Pryor. And it feels like I'm like a non sequitur. And I was curious.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to remember how that worked in the books. Was it just something that, because I know Sinister clones Jean, but then sends, and then Cyclops doesn't know. It's the same. It's kind of the same iteration, but I don't know where the Madeline name comes in exactly. I don't remember it because they refer to.
I'm checking out. It's a. I mean, in the comic books, it's based on the fact that she used to be someone named Madeline, and it's a cruel joke by Mr. Sinister calling her Madeline Pryor. Like, she was Madeline. But since she's not that in this, it's just a complete made-up name. And although, you know, neither Madeline nor Pryor is a bad name, it just feels like if I had to come up with a name for myself, I'd call myself, you know, like, Lightning Johnson, not necessarily Madeline Pryor. But whatever.
Lightning Johnson is funny. But yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, she has some pretty sick powers, the way that she was using them, and she manhandled Magneto, womanhandled, I should say.
No, I think manhandled, I don't think that becomes a different word.
That's a fair point. took over Morph's mind, and Cyclops hit her with the blast, and, you know, she went right back at him. And yeah, that was overall, it was another fun episode. You get the little demon stuff and everybody saying they're going to hell and whatnot. So it was a fun episode. We're going to continue and see where and how this goes. It's exciting to have this show in our lives and we'll see how it translates. Any other thoughts that you have?
No, I mean, I'm really enjoying this. It's like I said, I really can't emphasize how much I like that it moves, because it just, like, it is just so refreshing to have one of these shows where it's like problem introduced at the beginning of the episode and problem solved by the end of the episode. Not everything. There are still things that are still open, but it's like they introduce a storyline and the storyline ends. And, you know, I want to give another shout out to Beast, because, you know, we haven't given much love because he hasn't been involved in any of these entanglements. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? By the way, you keep saying that. If this show came out, like, I wish this show took place now, because they would just take it to the table. You know what I mean?
Oh,
take it
yeah,
to the table with sure. Jada. With Jada.
you would see him on Ianula, Fix My Life. Mm-hmm. You would see that. I could definitely see them going on one of them podcasts, one of the mutant podcasts to, mm-hmm. you know, try and work out their issues and stuff like that.
It you know damn well that there are in 2024 in the X-Men world, there are like hybrid there are men's rights podcasts, but like instead of the way that they'll talk about like alpha males, talk about mutants. Like it's like girls out here, they just want mutants. That's all they want. Like, you know, regular guys can't get anything. In fact, that might happen in a movie. I mean, that's really kind of a slam dunk.
I mean, I could definitely see it. Like, just imagine Wolverine doing a pod with Morph about the good old days and talking about old times and things along those lines.
who in the X-Men, not just in the show, would be the most likely to go on a I want to watch football game, eat food?
Oh wow. I think you could get Colossus on there. I think there's a little bit of that going on. Also Juggernaut. Like, I think Juggernaut would definitely go on the podcast and talk about,
and he,
like,
steak, pork, yeah, chilling. God, that is like, that's the best movie ever made. It just
Yeah, man. So, like, to have these characters continue and be a part of this, like, new wave of animation. And I know a lot of folks have been talking about, like, oh, can we bring back other things? Let's worry about this one right now. We got mm-hmm. something good and cooking. Not everything is gonna hit the same in 2024.
You know, my stance on things, generally speaking, is should we do X, Y, or Z? I don't know. Are you gonna make it good? Like, should we bring back? It's like people are like, should we bring back Batman the Animated Series? I don't know. Was it gonna be good? Like,
not around anymore. Yeah. But rest in peace.
I mean, I will say this. I think that Batman is the type of role where, like, I think that they shouldn't let that halt them for too long, because there's going to be Batman voice actors again, obviously, just because he's too popular a character. But I think that this show was announced forever ago, and they clearly took the time to make it good. You know what I mean? Like, and so if you're willing to make it good, and obviously that's easier said than done, but the thing about the stuff that Marvel does that's bad is, with a handful of exceptions, I would say Eternals probably being the biggest one. Usually when Marvel does something that's not good, the signs that it's not, of why it's not good, are pretty clear. Like, it's not, it's very rare where all cylinders are firing, where everyone's doing their best work, where there's no creative constraints, and Marvel does something bad. It's usually, and so, like, clearly they let this happen and made it, you know, it doesn't seem like there was a ton of crazy interference. And so, yeah, if you want to bring back other stuff, but let it be its own thing and let it be as creative and, you know, as interesting as this, go for it. But, like, I don't have confidence that they'll do this more than once. So for now, let's take a pause.
Yeah, keep it to what it is, and we'll see how everything else shakes out. But for right now, and really enjoying X-Men 97, we will definitely be back next week with more thoughts as far as that's concerned, as we're not only on this road of X-Men 97, but the road continues as we get closer to Deadpool and Wolverine, which, you know, as another month turns, we're headed to April, just a couple of months away. And it'll be interesting to see what happens during that time. This is all that we got at the moment for you. So, Jay Christie, where can we follow you, sir?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jay Christie. That's my other podcast, Love It for a Psych, where me and Andre Barrera are doing the USA Network original series Psych.
And you can also follow me on Twitter at AnthonyCanton_3. Follow the show at MC University Pod. And, of course, follow it on all platforms. Subscribe to the YouTube channel and everything that we got going on there. Patreon.com, as I mentioned before. And, we have some stuff cooking. Mission Impossible, check that out. Subscriber Mailbag, check that out. Bracket First Take, check that out. And the Discord, of course, if you like to get in there. So, for Jake Christie, I'm Anthony Canton III. This has been Marvel Cinematic University. We will talk to you next time.